We are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe De Leon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I am doing great, Blake. I am very, intrigued. Interested to see how we're going to get received by Ole Miss fans on today's episode when we do preview. Because the last time that we interacted with them, they did not like us very much.
They have not. They can still continue to go after family members. They still continue to go after us personally, which I don't really know if I mind them going after me personally. I do, however, mind the family member part. But here's what I've asked Ole Miss fans. What have I said that you disagree with? What is there that is out there that I have stated that you disagree with? Okay. Have I said that I think you'll be a bad team? No. Did I say in the playoff that your offense had to carry you to a win versus Georgia and then had to carry you again versus Miami? Yes. Where's the lie? Where is the lie? Okay. Lane Kiffin signed more 5-stars in 6 months or 5 months at LSU than he did his entire career at Ole Miss. Where's the lie? I've never said that I thought that Trinidad Chambliss was a bad quarterback. I know you haven't. I know that we've had our differences in reference to how his eligibility came to pass. But just because it's Trinidad Chambliss, they took it in some kind of way. What have we stated? We've never once stated that we thought that they're a bad team. I still think they're going to be a highly competitive team and a good team. And I think that they're going to be dangerous in the SEC, but they don't hear any of that. They don't hear any of that, nor do they want to listen to it.
Well, we'll try to be, we're going to be as positive as we can be, to your point. Again, they're not very big fans of ours at the current moment. So I'm sure there'll be things that they'll find to not enjoy, but that's not what we're going to focus on. We're trying to preview every top team. We're trying to get through as many teams as possible. We've previewed a lot of the teams in the SEC that have a chance to do damage this year. Probably going to do LSU next. That's likely going to be the Monday show because we're not going to have a Sunday show for Mother's Day on Sunday. Right. But, I tell you what, regardless of the feedback that we get from Ole Miss fans, I do think that this Ole Miss team, outside of the obvious of Trinidad Chambliss and Kwon Lacy, I think that they got some really good players on defense. They're filling in a lot of gaps with a lot of transfer portal players. But I'm going to bring up, when we talk about their front seven, there are two defensive linemen that I graded and I evaluated for summer scouting, and I was really impressed. I have high grades on these two kids, and I think that they're going to be drafted in the top 100. One of them could be drafted at the end of the first round. They have a lot of potential. And one thing that I have noticed just personally from like paying attention to Pete Golding is he's had some deep defensive line rotations, and he's always gotten the most out of these guys that have tools and traits. If Ole Miss ends up being dominant up front, that's the key for them being successful this year, which we'll get to during the preview.
I completely agree with you, and we will get into that preview here today. But if you're an Ole Miss fan, our good friend Neil McCready and company are over there covering the Rebels for our good friends over and our partners over at 24/7. So you can do this with Joe and I. You can go over to 24/7 Sports today and use our annual promo code to get 60% off of your purchase. Use the promo code RJ60. That's RJ60 for the annual premium year. You will be able to get 60% off. Listen, Joe and I will be there covering all of your teams. We want to interact with you on these boards. I've already been on there, Joe. I think you have been as well. So interact with us. We're going to be over the 24/7 sites all over the place. So come and join us today. And if you want to go over to 24/7 Sports, use our promo code RJ60 at checkout to get 60% off of your annual membership. So, Joe, first off, episode 2, really, with our good partners over at CBS and 24/7 Sports. I just want to go ahead and say this because I had to say it on AYS yesterday. Yes, my Facebook account did get hacked. Yes, we are not live on our Ruffino and Joe Facebook page. I apologize. We are working on that. You know, we thank God we're partnered with a new team. They're assisting us in that. So with that being said, we apologize for everyone on Facebook. I don't know why it was still allowing us to do clips and stuff on there, but regardless, we are figuring all that out. I got hacked. They, you know, a lot of things are going on. We're going to do everything humanly possible to get that back so that we can get you covered over on that platform. But Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter is still active. And Joe, I deeply apologize for that. You told me, you know, I got happy. I'm like, oh, we got verified. Cool. We signed with CBS. Same day we got verified. And I clicked a stupid link and then off we went. Now I shouldn't have done it. So that is
my learn.
Yeah, you live. I ain't ever clicking a link again.
No,
they're gonna
have to seriously. You shouldn't. No, you shouldn't. No,
I'm never clicking a link again. I promise you that. But regardless,
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
You know who should click a link?
Who's that?
These coaches. And I don't know how to transition into this, but I thought it would be funny. But Joe, it was announced today or yesterday via Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports that a 24-team playoff could be imminent, but this isn't necessarily the body who voted on it that has the final say. The AFCA came out with a recommendation to the college football playoff in the NCAA yesterday, recommending the implementation of, Joe, not a 24-team playoff, but the maximum number of teams that should be allowed to get in. They also stated that they wish that to discontinue conference championship games and that season's end should be mid-January. Now, we've talked about this before, but I'm going to start off with you here today. Just to give you a quick update, some of the coaches that are on this board is Illinois head coach Brett Bielema, Brent Venables of Oklahoma, Clark Lee of Vanderbilt, Rhett Lashley of SMU, Joey McGuire of Texas Tech, and Pat Fitzgerald as well. So, Joe, what are your thoughts of coaches being very vocal about wanting this playoff to expand? Because it seems as if that the coaches, like Josh Pate was talking to Kirby. Kirby and him had by the way, elite debate by our good friend. But he's debating Kirby live on camera. And I'm like, holy moly. And he's like, you know, he's going after him. And I'm just sitting here saying to myself, like, why do all of these coaches continue to want to push a more of an expansion? And this time they want to double it, which is even more bonkers. But I kick it off to you. What are your thoughts on the AFCA voting for this change?
Yeah, I think that as much as there was an uproar for this, a lot of people were reacting to this today. You were one of them. I mean, you woke me up with this text message. I look at my phone and I'm wondering what you were hitting me up about. And I'm like, oh, of course it was.
And my clock.
You didn't literally wake me up with it, but it was like the first thing that I saw. I was like, huh, I wonder what Blake's Blake's mad about. Oh, it's the 2014 playoff. I understand why
angry that early in the morning, but continue.
You're not sending me that in a good mood. I can tell you that much. Because I know how you feel about this too. I know how you feel about the 2014 playoff.
Right.
I think that the 2014 playoff format is stupid, but I'm not really reacting to this where I'm upset by the source of where this decision is coming from.
Agreed.
Like, plain and simple. And you read off a list of coaches who, for the most part, probably aren't sniffing the college football playoff unless there's more seats available to them. They right. would be in the playoff on a consistent basis. Teams like Illinois, Vanderbilt, SMU, Texas Tech, and Michigan State, all those teams would be in the playoff field on a consistent basis if it were 24 teams. It requires tremendous major, like, program resetting seasons in order for them to get into the 12-team playoff. Like, they're going to suggest this and they're going to push for this because it gets them more money.
Correct.
It hits their incentives in their contracts if they reach a playoff. So we're asking for the wrong source to provide their insight on the playoff field. It's the reason why when we hear from Heupel and we hear from Drinkwitz, who have been outspoken on this, and spoken very directly about going to a 2014 playoff field. They know that their best chances on getting long-term, ridiculously long-term extensions, as well as hitting their incentives in their contracts, is if there was a playoff field that would be possible to make if they went 8-4. I don't think people really realize what 24 teams really, really means. It means that 8-4 SEC teams and Big Ten teams would be getting in, and 3-loss Big 12 and ACC teams would also be in the mix as well.
Did you see my tweet today?
I did.
Okay. The second one was, so think about this. Let's say we go to 24 teams. Joe, last year alone, before the college football playoff started, so the final 25, okay? So let's take 1 through 24. I took Alabama out of this equation for just because, remember, you and I had the argument, can you really penalize Alabama for having 3 losses because they went to a conference championship game and lost to Georgia? So actually, it's 9. But I left Alabama out because they were in a conference championship game. Did you know 8 of those teams that would be in a 24-team playoff has 3 losses or more, and Iowa has 4 losses? So over a third of the teams would have 3 losses or more. One of them has 4 losses. And let me just throw this your way. You're going to have to convince me that even in a 24-team playoff, why is Iowa there? Why is they got 4 losses? Joe, I can rattle off 2 other Big Ten teams that I think should have been above them, and I could easily rattle off 2 other SEC teams that I think that should have been above them. But that's neither here nor there. When we talk about the playoff and its expansion, everybody, I don't really know that the college football fan, holistically speaking, is asking for this. There have been polls that have been put out. There have been studies that have been put out. And literally, and I'm being very generous here, well more than 85% of college football fans do not want a playoff expanded. They want the regular season to mean something. And when you continue to do this, you devalue it. You know how I know you devalue it? Ask Ohio State. Well, Blake, they're a national champion. Yes, sounds good. But at the same time, that is what made college football unique. I heard Kirby Smart the other day say, well, how do you explain Miami? Miami had 2 losses. They got into the playoff and went to a national title game. Sounds good, Kirby, but that's not the point. I'm not asking about Ohio State being left out of a playoff because they weren't going to be left out. I wasn't really asking about Miami, even though we had those debates about Miami getting in. You remember the stance that I had. Here's the problem that I have. Over the last 2 seasons, Boise State, SMU, Clemson, Texas Tech, James Madison, Tulane, Tennessee, and Arizona State all made the 12-team playoff. They got outscored 303 to 140. Joe, that equals 23 touchdowns. Those teams got beat by 23 touchdowns, holistically speaking. They got ransacked. Texas Tech, who was a top 4 team, didn't score a single point. And I threw Arizona State in there just to say, hey, these are the teams that we didn't think that should have been in there. Tennessee included. I thought that South Carolina should have been in over Tennessee when they got in there. Joe, now you're going to have to explain when that happens, how are you going to have more competitive games? When you expand the playoff, you're going to have more games. They're not going to be more competitive. They are not going to be more competitive, regardless of what you think of them. So you want more competitive games. You mean more competitive than the Big Ten and SEC championship games from the last 2 years? Joe, the Indiana-Ohio State game was a 13-10 total. Was that not one of the more intriguing games of the season? You had a situation 2 years ago where Carson Beck goes out of a game and Georgia finds a way to hold on against Texas to win the SEC. It was the talk of all of college football for a month of what Georgia was going to do in the playoff. You want more competitive games, but you want to take conference championship games away. And here's my the conversation that I want to have and ask, who's the conference champion? Everybody keeps telling me that they want to go to more of an NFL level model of more teams getting in. Well, guess what the NFL has? Division champions. So how do you determine it? If I got 18 teams in the Big Ten, 16 teams in the SEC, and multiple teams who don't play each other have one loss, how do I determine it? How do I determine it?
You can't. There's no way to do it.
So I continue to ask the question. You keep telling me you want more competitive games. Oh, really? Well, the last 2 years, the teams that I listed off got beat 303 to 140 by 23 touchdowns. And you're telling me that the 12-team playoff is competitive. Are you sure? The last eight games and eight teams that are standing are competitive. Mm-hmm. But these aren't. So, Joe, I keep asking the question. Everything that these people keep trying to convince me of and tell me of is a flat-out lie. You keep making up stuff that doesn't exist. You don't look into it. So it's time for college football and for the fans to make a stand and say, listen, we are telling you we don't want this. But, Joe, they keep doing it, and nobody's there to answer the door.
Well, first and foremost, any fan that suggests that, oh, we do want this, you're not a real college football fan.
No, you're not.
You are not embedded. You are new to this. You are not as deeply invested in college football, because the difference between college football, as you said, and the NFL is that college football's regular season is sacred. You have these massive regular season games where you'll have a gigantic brand like Alabama go into Georgia and the lights are super bright and it's at night and the stadium's rocking.
You got LED lights going off.
Right. And we're taking that away because that loss just means that the seeding gets separated. You can lose a couple more games and still get into the playoff field. Here's a layer with this, because to drive it back to the coaching point, here's something that these coaches, I think, are not considering with the 2014 playoff that we haven't even discussed. Like, the biggest storyline that dominated the 12-team playoff, it took us just 2 years for this to happen. Lane Kiffin left before the college football playoff, and he went to LSU. It was a serious issue. Everybody brought up, this is what's wrong with the calendar. This is what's wrong with everything. It's so flawed. People were criticizing Kiffin for making the decision that he did, but he had no control. Like, we go to 24 teams. The teams that are in the back end of the bracket, those is usually the teams where those coaches get hired away to go to the open jobs. Is it not?
It's going to get not worse. Usually,
it's going to get worse. But that's my point. We're going to have potentially like 3-4 teams without coaches. Mm-hmm. We're going to have shit like that. That is the one thing that I have seen nobody brought up with this 2014 playoff. I have dismissed outcomes like that simply for the fact that I was hoping that we wouldn't get this far. But now we're increasing momentum for this. Can the coaches realize that they're pushing towards something that is totally untenable? That is something that overall, for all the flaws that you discussed and what's wrong with it from a competitive standpoint, why are we willing to put together a bracket that will result in teams not having head coaches? More importantly, across the board, there's also going to be, even if it's not a head coach, look at the amount of teams that had coordinators that were on the way out. Oregon got completely dogged by Indiana because their coordinators were in the process of preparing for their new jobs. Mm-hmm. So, Blake, what are we doing with this? These coaches aren't willing to look in front of their faces at the problems that they're creating for themselves. Why would you willingly vote for this? It's so stupid. It's so unbelievably stupid.
Well, I've brought this argument up before, and this doesn't make friends for us, and it doesn't make friends for the show. Who said coaches know what's best for the sport? Who said it? Because can we be completely truthful? Coaches keep blaming NIL in the portal. Who keeps bastardizing it? Who keeps allowing staffs and parts of their staff to tamper with players? You know, the only person that can make a stand and say enough is enough, he's already done it, is Dabo. So you keep going out there talking out of both sides of your mouth and you say, well, I got to do it to be successful. Well, then you're not standing on moral ground. Then you come out and say, we want more of a play, more of an expanded playoff. Why? Because you make more money. That's it. Josh Heupel, Eli Drinkwitz, Kirby Smart says it needs to be expanded. I love Kirby Smart. I still believe he's the best coach in college football. No one has two national titles outside of Dabo and him. Nobody. I still think he's elite. But he was also the one who said that we shouldn't have a spring portal. Do you think that Kirby wants a spring portal now? He just lost an edge guy. Do you think he wants it now? He also said that we need to do all of this in December. What about now? Joe, they still, to your point, the biggest issue in college football this year, and we saw this, was the schedule. And it might not happen this year because there have been a lot of coaching turnover. So normally when you have this much coaching turnover, you don't get it that way again because coaches get to, you know, go on and you don't really have it. I mean, you might have some like Shane Beamer or whoever, it may come to pass. But even though it won't be like this in South Carolina, like you won't have Penn State open. You won't have LSU open. You won't have Florida open. You won't have Michigan open. Joe, those were the schools that were open. Penn State, Michigan, LSU, Florida are four of the biggest brands in college football, and the schedule completely messed up three of them. Mm-hmm. Completely. Kalani Sitake, God bless him. I mean, what would have happened if BYU would have gotten in there? Joe, you would have had two-thirds of the playing field almost that would have had coaches that were moving on. You had James Madison that had a coach moving on. Ole Miss, Tulane. You had Oregon who had two coaches that were coordinators moving on. And yet you haven't fixed the biggest problem that you have. And I will throw this your way. Have we not seen these games in the regular season so that we can make a determination? You know, like I saw Tennessee go 8-4. I saw them go 8-4. They went 0-4 against the teams that were ranked. I saw it with my own eyes. I also saw, and this doesn't benefit my team, the team that I cover and enjoy watching, LSU had no business beating South Carolina 2 years ago. They got fleeced. Let's just call it what it is. And they would have gotten into the playoff if not for that have happening. Now, they allowed a lot of bad things. Their quarterback got hurt. All of those different things. But I look at this situation and say, coaches don't always know what's best for the sport. And again, that does not make it better for us. Now, I'm going to throw this your way too. Did you see in Ross's article, boy, we got some flip-flopping by commissioners too. Big 12 and ACC commissioner Brett Yormark and Jim Phillips have also flipped from Greg Sankey and now want to go to a 2014 model. I mean,
Pete Bavacqua also brought up in that as well. So I wonder who's doing this lobbying. But wait, I want to bring this up too.
Before I kick it to you, Brett Yormark and Jim Phillips have made more flips on this situation than the House of International Pancakes, a.k.a. IHOP. Joe, they flip-flop every 6 months, do they not?
Yeah.
They backed Sankey. Do you know what they're doing? They're being politicians here. They're literally rolling with the wave of what everybody in social media thinks. They're not putting their foot in the ground and they're not putting their flag in the ground and saying, no, this is what's best for college athletics. The only one, and I don't agree with a lot of things that this man does, and I've called him out for it. The only man who's really kind of put a stand down has been Sankey.
Well, here's the problem though, is that as much as Sankey has put his foot down, I fear that he's going to get turned pretty soon because this was in raw. This is the, out of everything that we talked about here, this was the meaty thing. This excerpt from Ross's article that I was like, oh shit, this is going to change everything. This is the blurb. CFP media consultants, who doesn't love consultants, are in the process of delivering a financial valuation of a 24-team field. estimates range widely from 300 to 700 million in additional revenue for the new 10 games. ESPN owns two of the new games under its current contract with the CFP.
Can I call Tom? I'm not trying to call out Ross on this. That's too big of a thing to not run down. $400 million difference is a massive difference.
I mean, I would buy that. Well, the reason why I buy this is that these consultants, these financial analysts that do these things where they put together these projections before they make decisions. You're never going to just have a decision blindly happen in any industry, especially in the media industry.
Yeah, they're going to know.
They build models for this stuff so that they can understand how much more money can we make before they make that move. There's constantly things that are floated across the board at these big companies before they actually move forward when they go through the modeling. $300 to $700 million feels like that is a number that would completely push this thing over the edge. And it goes with the last time that we talked about this, why the college football playoff expanding to 24 teams. One of the biggest reasons was as a way to help the programs that are struggling financially. So the back end of these Power Four conferences that are just not built to succeed because they don't have the brand recognition. So if you expanded the playoff, there'd be more money to go around and there'd be more money to share with players and to build out their athletic departments. This is just going to fuel that further. I think that the thing that's really messed up about this entire saga and this entire discussion is that over the past couple of months, as this is heated up, we have ramped up with more and more bad reasons. We have continuously, it has been revealed to us worse and worse information that is indicating to me that we're going to end up with this 2014 playoff. These answers make some sense, but they are not reasons that you should buy into. They are very, very flawed, and they're being used as bailouts for coaches and for programs that, quite frankly, don't deserve it. That's the thing that somebody needs to put their foot down and say is, just because there's more money to be made for coaches hitting their incentives, just because there's more money to be made for the programs that would sneak their way into the back end and then get blown out by 30 points, or the programs that don't even make the playoff at all, that just want to get their paycheck because the conference got their payout. Just because that is on the table does not mean that this should happen and go forward. It is a solution that is incredibly soft because we're trying to placate those that are struggling.
Well, it is all about the money, hashtag Jerry Maguire. But they're not making good points, and they're not making sense. Please tell me an argument that makes sense.
Well, okay.
Here's their argument.
I can understand why they're approaching it, why coaches want the expanded model. I can understand why they want all this money to better support college athletics. I understand it. I don't agree with it, though.
No, well, of course. Joe, I want more money, too. I want more money, too. Like, who doesn't want more money? But what I'm talking about is take the money out of it. You're making your points that they are making is making it seem it is all about the money because you're not coming with logic and you're not coming with sense. Pun intended, I guess. There is no logic. Players get paid more money. Sure, sounds good. I understand that. Bowl season, sounds good. I understand that. But at the same time, you're devaluing what made college football, the regular season. And let me just say this to the media members who have never covered and been a part of national championships. I've been a part of five of them in 6 years. Do you understand what it takes to get there? Do you truly understand? Do you understand the ramifications of when LSU went into Alabama all those years? Do you understand the ramifications of Ohio State versus Michigan? Do you understand the ramifications of Oregon versus Ohio State? Do you understand the ramifications of now Texas Tech and BYU, what that might mean for the Big 12? Do you understand the ramifications of Texas versus Texas A&M? Clearly you don't, because Joe, here's the truth. Does the regular season even matter now?
Well, what you're essentially doing...
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the one thing that I had this thought earlier when you were talking, the thing that's really stupid and misguided about this whole thing, what you're doing with the 24 expanded playoff field, you're essentially moving valuable regular season games that have increased intensity, and you're moving them to the end of the season for cross conference matchups. That's what this is. But that shouldn't be excited. What do you mean, are we?
Because the way that I see this, you have Iowa going up against teams like Georgia.
It's the equivalent. You're not creating a lot of like games that are going to end up being, this is why it doesn't work. You're part of the argument that I see supporting this is, well, at the end of the season, we're going to have a lot of great games and the entire playoff field is going to create really competitive matchups and we're going to see a lot of good games. And in the process, when you're following that logic, you're, as we've talked about, you're devaluing the regular season. But to your point that you keep bringing up, you would have such lopsided matchups. Those that believe that there are more meaningful games and that teams are going to try harder at the end of the season, that's false. You're going to get blowouts. If anything, albeit the 24th or 20th ranked team that snuck in with four losses that had a strong finish to the year, that team might be motivated and excited. But one thing that we've learned, Blake, with the expanded playoff and just the playoff in general, the teams that are the top ranked teams that might have the shaky game in the middle of the year against Mississippi State or Rutgers because they overlooked them, they don't do that in a playoff setting. They're more pissed off and motivated and focused than they ever are. They spend and ramp up the intensity and preparation for those games. The bullshit that you're going to have teams that are more motivated and more competitive in those matchups, that's not going to happen. Look at who they're facing. You're ignoring who their opponent is. A motivated Georgia is far more dangerous than a motivated Iowa. That's part of the dumb thing that I don't understand that people keep trying to argue.
Just for reference, before we get to this G6 thing, do you know what two of the playoff matchups would have been this year?
No, go ahead.
What 24 expanded league. Number 10 Miami takes on number 22 Georgia Tech. Do you want to hear another one?
That should have been the ACC championship game, probably.
It should have been. That's the ironic part. Do you want to hear another one?
Yep.
Houston takes on Notre Dame.
Notre Dame would have hung like 50. 60. On. It would have been 50 to 10.
Would you like to hear another one?
Sure.
Texas would have taken on Virginia.
50 to 10.
You want to hear another one? This is probably the only good game, maybe, potentially. Vanderbilt would have taken on Michigan.
That would have been good. That would have been a good game.
That would have been a good game. Do you want to hear another one?
Okay.
USC would have taken on Arizona. And now you're trying to convince me that, yes, you might have, Michigan versus Vandy would have been a very intriguing matchup. What about the other five in the first round? I didn't bring up Tulane. I didn't bring up Iowa. I didn't bring up any of those teams that would have gotten clobbered by Texas A&M, that would have gotten clobbered by Oklahoma, that you can say whatever you want about Alabama. Joe, I got to be real with you. I think Alabama's going to beat the doors off of James Madison too.
Yeah.
So, now when you put that into perspective, when you put into the perspective of you saying, well, Blake, we want more competitive games, where are they? Because you saw those teams last year. Those games aren't competitive. When I have Notre Dame going up against Houston, you're trying to convince me that that is a more competitive game? That's what you're trying to convince me of. So now, not only that, and Joe, we haven't talked about this. Now, you're taking away conference championship games so that I can watch James Madison versus Miami or Notre Dame versus Houston. So now I don't get Indiana versus Ohio State or Georgia versus Alabama, part two of that season, and you want me to have Houston versus Notre Dame. That is your argument right now.
Yeah.
If that were the playoff field, that is where you are. Please explain to me how that makes college football better.
It doesn't.
I think this is what I think. Before we move on, I think coaches think it is cool to go out there and have a take. Do you mean to tell me that Kirby Smart or Eli Drinkwitz or Josh Heupel or Dan Lanning or Ryan Day are sitting at their desk doing what we have to do and prep for what would a college football playoff look like in a 2024 team field? Are you saying it because you want more money because it's the cool thing to say? Have you actually dug into it? Because if you had dug into it, there's no way that you can convince me that you think that Notre Dame versus Houston is more competitive than a conference championship game in the Big Ten with Indiana versus Ohio State. There's no way you can do it. So now try to make an example out of that. You don't know what you're talking about. So you keep saying coaches have all the answers. Maybe you thought they had all the answers in the 1990s, in the early 2000s, like we're the 504 boys from the 99 to the 2000s. Back that thing up. That's not how this is going to work.
No, they're seriously overlooking a lot of things. And I think that their intentions are selfish for the most part. I think that as you kind of mentioned here, their perspective, they're not looking at it from a wide lens. They're just looking at it from what is best for my team, for my school. They're not perceiving this from what is best for the sport as a whole. What is the best product? What is going to be the most entertaining? What is going to be the most entertaining postseason? What is going to produce the actual most competitive matchups? Every coach would want a shot to get in there. They're all going to advocate for this. You're not going to find a coach that is going to say no. Thankfully, they don't have any voting say and that this is just a recommendation. But
well, you know who does? The commissioners. And they have a lot of damn say, and they're starting to push the 24 team field. And I asked the question to Brett Yormark, to Tony Petitti, to Jim Phillips, to Pete Bavacqua, it is your job to look at Notre Dame. You're the only sitting AD that's in these level of meetings because the conference commissioners are the ones that are doing this for other conferences, and you're not even in a conference. With all due respect to Notre Dame, do you think it's more competitive for you to face Houston because you don't have a conference championship game? With all due respect, you can lean that way and say that and say we don't need conference championship games. Joe, Notre Dame versus Houston is not more competitive than Indiana versus Ohio State. No one can tell me otherwise.
Yeah, we're removing games that happened in different settings that were competitive, were entertaining, were fun to watch, that were highly watched by a lot of people. The conference championship games, important premier matchups during the regular season. When those games lose their value, it won't happen overnight. You're not going to have Alabama versus Georgia lose its shine overnight. That's not going to happen. But over a course of a couple of years, everybody's still going to watch them, but it's not going to have that same level of intensity. It's just not going to have that same level of energy that you get when you watch a game like that. You'll be upset at the end. You'll be like, oh man, I really wanted to beat this team, but you know what? We're still good. We've got a couple more shots to get ourselves in. I think that we're all on the same page here that this is
it's a joke.
Very misguided. It's incredibly misguided. Incredibly.
Quickly, thoughts on the G6 saying that they want to do their own playoff, or do you want to punt that?
Let's punt because we got 20 minutes to get into the Ole Miss.
All right. Here we go. I knew we would go long on this. That's what you said. All right. Let's get into it. So, Joe, we continue on our path of doing deep dives on teams. It's the team in the SEC that loves you and I the most. The Ole Miss Rebels, who are in the Final Four a season ago, we don't even have to introduce how and say how the ending of last season happened for Ole Miss. They beat Georgia. They beat Tulane. They are a touchdown away from beating Miami to go to a national championship game. Lane Kiffin no longer there. Pete Golding in. Joe, when you look at Ole Miss going into the 2026 season, what are your thoughts?
Blake, I understand that they've got a tough schedule, which we'll talk about at the end. I understand that there's some looming questions. What can we expect from Pete Golding in his first full year as a head coach? Aside from all of that, if we're looking at the core of this roster and what they're bringing back, I think that there's a lot to buy into. I think that outside of us getting hyped up on Trinidad Chambliss returning for another year and him getting this extra year of eligibility and to get to finish off his college career with a bang, for him playing the way that he did last season, despite all the challenges, him finding ways to overcome it constantly will keep Ole Miss alive in games. Not to mention the fact that he's got one of the most explosive running backs next to him that is going to produce huge home run plays every single time that he touches the rock. But Blake, as I dug into this roster, I kept finding things that I really liked. I like the fact that they're bringing back three guys along their offensive line, which they've got some questions about who's going to fill in those other spots. A total of these three players only allowed three sacks the entire season in 2025. Mm-hmm. Now they've got Chambliss behind them, so that means that they're going to get a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because he's always going to evade pressure. But Patrick Kutas only allowed 15 pressures. Sanders allowed 13. Townsend allowed 15. Pretty good numbers from a group that is experienced. Offensive line, defensive line. These are the things that we talk about every single show for why you should buy into a team. The teams with experienced players along the lines of scrimmage and talent along the lines of scrimmage are going to be the ones that find ways to win unexpectedly if you overlook it. Their defensive line is where I'm juiced up, though. I watched Will Echols. I watched Cam Franklin the past couple of days, and I was impressed by both of them. Will Echols is a really underrated player in just the overall zeitgeist of defensive tackles in college football. He is mobile. He is powerful. He will punch you in the throat. He is going to throw you away to make a play behind the line of scrimmage. And Cam Franklin is another dude who's got great instincts, who's incredibly versatile. He's a long kid, over 290 pounds, does a really, really good job anchoring against the run, and they were playing him all over the place. Not to mention the fact that they're bringing back Suntereen Perkins, who has been one of the more productive linebackers, hybrid linebackers in college football. Blake, there's a lot of things that we can discuss with this team. There's a ton of turnover on the back end of their defense. There's a ton of turnover at wide receiver. It's going to possibly have some growing pains. But Blake, with the teams that they're facing off with this year, I have buy-in because they've got one of the best line of scrimmage setups on both sides of the ball in the SEC.
I do think that they have done a fantastic job, obviously adding Kerryus Kern in that mix as well. I think Kerryus Kern is a guard. I've said this for over a year and a half. If they put him at tackle, I'm going to freak out. With that being said,
apparently Kern, things weren't going that great, so they brought in a JUCO kid who they're pretty excited about. So just tossing that.
That's where I was going. Well, you can't put a kid at tackle. You can't put him at tackle. He's a guard. How dumb can people be? Please don't get me on this tangent. With that part being said, look, you're returning Kawan Lacy, you're returning Trinidad Chambliss. In a lot of ways, Joe, I do think that he was arguably the best quarterback in college football last year. Now, you can have the debate between him and Mendoza, and that's completely fair. I do think he outplayed Mendoza in a lot of ways, specifically meaning there were a lot of times in the playoffs his defense just got run flat over. They got run flat over by Georgia. They got run flat over by Miami. They could not sustain against a physical team. A lot of those guys are back, and it's going to be interesting to see with nine guys in that back seven coming from the portal, is Pete Abel, who is a defensive-minded guy, is he able to reinforce what they were defensively 2 years ago? I don't know if he can without Walter Nolan and Ivy and the gang that he had there. I do like Perkins, but I'm really interested to see, because I think to you what you're saying here is that they have a lot of talent. And I agree, they have a lot of talent. Pete is a very good recruiter. He's a very good evaluator. They got level at every really good talent at every single position group. It's going to be interesting to see what goes on at wide receiver. But there are questions that I have here. Joe, offensively, with John David Baker coming in and Lane Kiffin and the entire staff going out, it's not just as easy as thinking that you can replace all of that and continue to hit the strides that you were, Trinidad Chambliss or not. Trinidad is going to have to go off in a lot of situations because, Joe, that front seven that you talked about, Nate Frazier doesn't go out for Georgia. They're not winning that game.
Miami leaned on them and leaned on them and leaned on them and leaned on them. And if it wasn't for Kawan Lacy and if it wasn't for Trinidad Chambliss being Superman with the S on his chest, I really do believe that they wouldn't have even been close in that game for a lot of regards. But they have a lot of individualized talent. I still think that this is one of the more dangerous teams in the SEC from an individual talent standpoint. But my question is, we saw Pete at the during the playoffs. I thought that there were times where things were mismanaged. And this is the first time that he is a true head coach. Every head coach goes through growing pains, especially first time. And you've replaced your entire offensive staff. So I think people look at Ole Miss and say, well, they have Lacy, they have Trinidad. They do. And that makes them more dangerous than 98 to maybe even 99% of the teams in college football. But you're being compared now to that 1%, that team that can get into the Final Four. That is what you're looking to accomplish again. I think Trinidad, for what it's worth, Joe, I think he's probably a top two quarterback in their sport right now, and I don't know if he's two. He outperformed, in my opinion, guys like Julian Sain, Dante Moore, Arch Manning, and everybody looks at those guys as the top guys in the draft. Are we sure? Are we 1,000% sure on that? Because I saw Trinidad Chambliss do things that, quite frankly, I haven't seen a lot of dudes do. Oh, and by the way, he was able to run away and break tackles against Bain and Mezzador and really give Miami all kinds of fits with nothing but straight dudes defensively. I think they're dangerous, and we will get to their schedule in just a moment. But I do wonder, in replacing an entire offensive staff and Pete being a real true first-time head coach and a team that he built and having all of those decisions, how does that work? And can John David Baker replace shoes that might not be – I mean, like, bro, you're trying to replace Lane Kiffin, and you can say whatever you want about Lane if you're an Ole Miss fan, but that's not an easy replacement offensively of having to replace a guy like that on your sidelines.
So this is where I think the big questions do come into play. And forget the Lane Kiffin aspect of this. The main focus with this is just, how are you going to navigate this season with all of the turnover? So they're losing a lot of bodies. A couple guys went on to the NFL. A lot of your depth left. You had to retool and refuel through the transfer portal. They had the number two ranked class with the transfer portal on 24/7 Sports. So they were aggressive. They brought in a lot of really good players, a lot of guys that I'm intrigued to see what they do. Daryl Gill, Jalen Crawford, Edwin Joseph, Blake Purchase, Jordan Renaud. There's a lot of Luke Ferrelli, Horatio Fields. There's a lot of talent here, a lot of positions that need to hit the ground running and need to be prominent starters for you. Anytime that we have these teams that have a lot of transfer portal moves, we have skepticism. I don't think I have as much skepticism because it's not like they're doing it through their offensive and defensive lines. They're doing it on the back end, and it seems like those position groups are a lot more survivable. You can get by with transfer portal receivers. You can get by with transfer portal secondary players. Where you can't is with your defensive tackles, your edge rushers, and your offensive linemen. But I think that the biggest part with this is, and where this is probably going to sound very negative from the perspective of Ole Miss fans, you were really motivated. Your team was really motivated during the college football playoff run because of a number of your team members that were pissed off and that were motivated by what Lane Kiffin did. There was an intensity to prove Kiffin wrong during that playoff run and prove everybody wrong to show, hey, we can get to a national championship. We can win a national championship. Our coach bailed on us because he thought that he couldn't do that here, but that was far from the truth. And that was the collective belief from the Ole Miss fan base, was that they had a chip on their shoulder. Does that galvanization, does that wear off at a certain point? Does it wear off that motivation? Because how long can you stay pissed off for? And you've got a lot of new players that don't have that same sentiment because they weren't impacted by Lane Kiffin. And most importantly, can Pete Golding be as good as you're hoping? He was hired in a very, very dire situation. He was the right man at the right time. But at the same moment, we don't know long-term what he's capable of from a roster-building standpoint, from a team management standpoint. We know that he's a great defensive coach. There were plenty of people that questioned if he was even worthy of being Ole Miss's defensive coordinator when he got the job.
I think
Golding is a good coach and is going to figure this out, but I think that the expectation before we get into their schedule of them getting back to the college football playoff, I think it would require for a lot of things to go their way. Trinidad Chambliss is the type of quarterback for a lot of things to go your way, and the more that we doubt Ole Miss, the more that we keep getting proven wrong. I am exhibit A of that because I thought that they were going to get dogged by Georgia, and they didn't. Like, plain and simple, Golding needs to step up to the plate, though. That's the easiest thing that we have to take away from this, is that he has to step up to the challenge that's in front of him in his first full season of being the head coach.
In reference to your Ole Miss comment, then why were they going after John Summerall? You can't... This is an opinion. So I know this is going to get us into... That's not opinion.
Oh, okay, but I just don't think that that's relevant.
It is relevant because because they didn't believe him to start. And again, Joe, there were situations in the playoff. Are we going to ignore the mismanagement of the clock down the stretch in the fourth quarter versus Miami? Do we just forget that?
No, and I think that that's why he's got to learn on the job. And I was going to bring up, being a Notre Dame fan, the first year under that coach that took over in complicated situations. Marcus Freeman went on to obviously be a great coach and is proving to possibly be a better coach at Notre Dame than Brian Kelly was. But there were a lot of growing pains. There were constant issues in games because he didn't know how to manage games. He didn't know how to prepare effectively for games, and it showed up. So that stuff's going to happen. But I don't like bringing up the Summerall thing because I don't think anyone even expected that Golding would be even a candidate, that he was going to be an option.
That's my point.
But I would argue he's proven to be a pretty good option just from the early return.
Has he?
Second portal class, and he retained a number of key players, and they won two playoff games.
Yeah, but Joe, he didn't put that team together. He didn't go through an entire season doing it. You haven't brought up the offensive staff either. What's the ramifications of losing an entire offensive staff and bringing multiple guys in there from LSU who all got fired? The difference in LSU versus the guys that you brought in, one crew was fired, the other one got hired. I mean, do you think Frank Wilson had a good running back rotation? That's what you're trying to convince me of. Austin Thomas did a really good job as a GM offensively for LSU. What are you going to do at receiver for Trinidad? Do you expect that Jonte Cook is going to finally come out and bust out and have a great season? Is Deuce Alexander our true number one? I mean, are you going to be able to run the football? And can there be a situation where you can have John David Baker take over for Charlie Weiss Jr. and do some of the things that they did offensively? I'm old enough to remember where multiple wide receivers just got drafted from Ole Miss. And by the way, you had the best offensive mind in the game on your sideline. Oh, and by the way, his same philosophy was still there. That's what I learned. I also learned that there are situations, yes, you beat Georgia when Lane didn't. But that was on the road in Georgia. And he scored four straight touchdowns on Georgia. Defensively was the issue. For both times, Georgia scored more than 65 points on Ole Miss twice. Twice. And I'm supposed to say, because he won two playoff games with somebody else's other team, when he mismanaged the clock down the stretch, that there's not going to be situations in this specific season. I think Pete is going to be a good coach. But in this specific season, that there are not going to be growing pains. I'm sorry, I can't go there.
No, I'm not saying that there aren't going to be growing pains. And if anything, I'm emphasizing that there will be. He's never been a head coach. He's never been considered to be a candidate for any head coach opening at a considerable program. This was a job that he I do think that he earned it. He didn't like fully get handed a job that he shouldn't have been handed.
If the situation at Bama had not happened, he would have already been a head coach. Let's just be honest. Yeah. I think that that's fair.
I think that it's as much as you could sit here and say that every accomplishment that he's had has been partially driven from what Lane Kiffin has done. At the same time, we don't know fully what he's capable of. This from the angle that I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt because the returns have been good early. He has produced really, really talented defensive players. He has gotten a number of guys that have gone on to get drafted early. And the best players that they have returning, I think, were some of their best defensive pieces from a year ago. The guys that I thought that were inconsistent and that weren't very good, a number of them are gone. Like I didn't think Xavier Harris was a very good football player. He went undrafted as a result. People were projecting him to go early in like day three or round three in this past draft. I didn't see it. I saw a guy that was playing way too high, that was really out of shape. Mm-hmm. He was constantly out of breath during games.
Remember the playoff game where
his shirt was like pulled all the way up. But my thing with him is that he was one of the liabilities that you had at stopping the run. And now I think that you've got a core of players that are going to do a better job of it. We've got like 3 minutes. Do you want me to read through their schedule so that we can?
Yeah.
All right. These are the games that I think are the no-brainer wins. There should be wins. Charlotte at Vandy, Auburn versus Wofford. Maybe you'll disagree on a couple of those, but they're hosting Auburn. And I think that they're going to be able to beat a Vandy team with a freshman quarterback. Tough matchups that I think that they'll still win, but are going to be hard. Louisville in week one, that'll be the real understanding moment of how good the team is going to be. Mm-hmm. And Missouri. And then they're tough toss-up games that are the ones that could go either way that they're going to need to win in order for their season to go well. LSU at home, at Florida, at Texas, Georgia at home, at Oklahoma. That's a really tough stretch, but they do benefit from the fact that they're hosting LSU and they're hosting Georgia. The last time that they hosted Georgia, it was a huge victory. It was a big win.
Who are you picking to win that week three game?
Here's the thing. I'm not going to give you a verdict right now, but that's the type of game that you unload the clip and you put every ounce of attention.
And you think Lane isn't?
That's a good point. It's also the type of game that Lane would.
Really?
No, I think you're right. I think they're right. Well, Lane has a lot of inexplicable losses against.
Can we be blunt about something? His entire offensive staff was still there. He didn't call plays. He gave recommendations, and Charlie did a really good job. That's the team that he built. And you can call me an LSU homer. You can call me whatever you want. But his offensive coordinator brought in Trinidad Chambliss. His running backs coach brought in Kawan Lacy. His wide receivers coach brought in those wide receivers. And unless Trinidad Chambliss rips off that jersey yet again, like he did in the playoffs, and rips it off his chest and says, I'm going to go full Superman, Joe, you sure? Let's take LSU out of the equation because it's going to be a hostile environment for LSU to go in there and win because of everything that's going to be riding in on that game. You sure that they can beat Georgia? You sure that they can beat Oklahoma on the road? Are you sure that they can beat Texas? Are you sure? I mean, the Florida and the Swamp is a difficult place to play. You know how I know? Ask Ole Miss fans 2 years ago.
Right. That's a tough game to consider because it's on the road and you lost 2 years ago at Jackson Dart. But the way that I look at this with those, that's five games. I don't think that they're going 7-5. I don't think that they lose all those
games.
I don't either. I think that Trinidad, some people project that as their floor. I don't see that as their floor. Trinidad Chambliss is too good to lose that many games. I do think that they will beat Florida though. And I think that they're good enough to steal one of the LSU, Texas, Georgia, or Oklahoma. I see this team being a 9-3 team this upcoming year because that there will be headaches with first year of Pete Golding, headaches with roster turnover, but the core of players that come back and the elite superstars that you have on offense will be able to win you some big games. I'm not going to overlook them. I'm just not going to. I'm not going to do it.
Nor should you. All right. We will not be live on Sunday for Mother's Day.
We're going to respect our mothers. Until then, we'll see y'all soon. Y'all have a good night. Peace out, Girl Scouts.
Are you ready, kids? The SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise is here. And we're talking officially licensed, as seen on apparel and products at the official Paramount shop. Featuring inclusive sizing and gear for fans of all ages. From premium apparel to must-have accessories, head to paramountshop.com/SpongeBob and use code PODCAST20 to get 20% off. That's PODCAST20 at paramountshop.com/SpongeBob. Don't be a Squidward. Grab your gear today.